All right, let's go straight to the press conference that has just started in Washington with Attorney General William Barr.
Northern District of Florida, and Mike Sherwin, who was a national security prosecutor in Miami, but is currently serving in the office of the Deputy Attorney General. I want to thank the FBI and the other federal, state, and local enforcement agencies that were involved in responding to and in investigating this incident. I want to thank them for their rapid and excellent work. Many people worked long hours through the holidays, and I'm grateful for their diligence and their commitment in seeing it through. And you'll be hearing from the deputy director shortly about the details of the Bureau's investigation, which was truly superb. In considering this case, we have to remember that there are thousands of Allied pilots and other military personnel who receive training on military bases throughout the United States. These military partnerships are critically important to our country. The Royal Saudi Air Force, which flies American-made aircraft, is an important military partner and has long had a training relationship with the United States. On December 6, Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani, a member of the Royal Saudi Air Force, entered a building on grounds of the Pensacola Naval Air Station and killed three U.S. sailors and severely wounded eight other Americans. He was killed during the attack. This was an act of terrorism. The evidence shows that the shooter was motivated by jihadist ideology. During the course of the investigation, we learned that the shooter posted a message on September 11th of this year stating, "The countdown has begun." During the Thanksgiving weekend, he then visited the 9/11 memorial in New York City. He also posted other anti-American, anti-Israeli, and jihadi messages on social media, including 2 hours before his attack. Early reports indicated that the shooter arrived at the site accompanied by other Saudi cadets who took video during the attack. These reports turned out not to be accurate. The shooter arrived by himself. The other Saudi cadets happened to be in the area, and after the attack began, they took some videos of the resulting commotion around the building. They fully cooperated in the investigation, as did all other Saudi cadets who were interviewed by the FBI at the base and in other bases around the country. After Al-Shamrani entered the building and cased the facility, he proceeded to walk around, shooting down his unarmed victims in cold blood. During and after this heinous attack, there were many specific acts of courage, and I want to draw special attention to two U.S. Marines, Gunnery Sergeant Ryan Mazel and Staff Sergeant Samuel Mullins. They were outside the building when they heard the gunfire, and although unarmed, they ran into the building to confront the shooter. Their only weapon was a fire extinguisher that they pulled off the wall as they ran toward the gunfire. Although they were unable to engage the shooter, they helped save many lives by giving CPR and other urgent medical aid to the victims. I would also like to mention the heroic acts of Navy Airman Ryan Blackwell. The shooter shot Airman Blackwell 5 times. Yet he managed to jump on top of a fellow sailor to keep her from being shot, and then assisted other students and helped them escape, all while taking fire from the shooter. Ryan Blackwell's heroic acts saved countless lives that day. And we're grateful for the bravery of the base personnel and the local law enforcement responders who initially arrived at the scene and engaged the shooter. I would also like to address the cooperation of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia gave complete and total support to our counter-terrorism investigation. They ordered all Saudi trainees to fully cooperate. This assistance was critical to helping the FBI determine whether anyone assisted the shooter in these attacks. While there is no evidence of assistance or pre-knowledge of the attack by other members of the Saudi military or any other foreign nationals who were training in the United States, we did learn of derogatory material possessed by 21 members of the Saudi military who were training in the United States. 17 had social media containing some jihadi or anti-American content. However, there was no evidence of any affiliation or involvement with any terrorist activity or group. 15 individuals, including some of the 17 I just mentioned, so there is overlap, had some kind of contact with child pornography. While one of these individuals had a significant number of such images, all the rest had one or two images, in most cases posted in a chat room by some other person or received over social media. The relevant U.S. Attorney's offices independently reviewed each of the 21 cases involving derogatory information and determined that none of them would, in the normal course, result in federal prosecution. However, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia determined that this material demonstrated conduct unbecoming an officer in the Royal Saudi Air Force and in the Royal Navy, and the 21 cadets have been disenrolled from their training curriculum in the U.S. military and will be returning to Saudi Arabia later today. The Kingdom has assured...
All right, let's bring back in Andy McCarthy.
We're not going to get anything more on the feed? Okay. All right. 112 FM Talk, 106.5. So you heard a little bit of what Attorney General William Barr said. Let's see if we get, pick it back, because to me there's more to this. I mean, there's more questions here. Can we go to the live feed? Okay, let's go elsewhere. Let's see. We got it.
We've been providing documents. Further, the Kingdom has assured us that if we later decide to charge any of those being sent back to Saudi Arabia in connection with this counterterrorism investigation, they will be returned for trial. We appreciate the Kingdom's cooperation in this case. Finally, I want to address an issue regarding the shooter's phones. The shooter possessed two Apple iPhones, seen here on the posters. Within one day of the shooting, the FBI sought and received court authorization, based on probable cause, to search both phones in an effort to run down all leads and figure out with whom the shooter had been communicating. During the gunfight with the first responders, the shooter disengaged long enough to place one of his phones on the floor and shoot a single round into the device. It also appears the other phone was damaged. Our experts at the FBI Crime Lab were able to fix both damaged phones so that they are operational. However, both phones are engineered to make it virtually impossible to unlock without the password. It is very important for us to know with whom and about what the shooter was communicating before he died. We have asked Apple for their help in unlocking the shooter's phones. So far, Apple has not given any substantive assistance. This situation perfectly illustrates why it is critical that the public be able to get access to digital evidence once it has obtained a court order based on probable cause. We call on Apple and other technology companies to help us find a solution so that we can better protect the lives of American people and prevent future attacks. With that, I will turn things over to the Deputy Director of the FBI, Dave Bowditch.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to offer a brief overview of our investigation into this particular attack. As you can imagine, this has been a large and incredibly complex investigation with dozens of investigative entities being involved. Let me start by what we've done so far. Since the beginning of this investigation, the FBI and our partners have been united in one goal, to determine if this shooter acted alone or if anyone helped him. To explain the scope of the investigation, so far we've interviewed more than 500 people, with witnesses, base personnel, and the shooter's friends, classmates, and associates. Even today, we continue to run down any new leads in an effort to find as many answers as possible for the victims and their families. For more than a month now, this has been an around-the-clock investigation. As the Attorney General mentioned, this occurred on December 6th. That is going into a holiday season where our folks work 24/7 as necessary throughout the holidays. This investigation involved hundreds of special agents from the FBI, intelligence analysts, and professional experts from around the country, in addition to our counterparts, which I will talk to you about in just a minute. We've employed dozens of surveillance teams and executed, served, or obtained numerous search warrants, subpoenas, court orders, and emergency disclosure requests. We've also collected more than 42 terabytes of data, digital media, in an effort to exploit that data, and the effort to exploit that data continues to this day. While we're still searching for more information, so far we have not identified any co-conspirators, any evidence that the shooter acted with anyone else, or that he was inspired by any one specific group. Social media attributed to the shooter suggests that he harbored anti-US military and anti-Israel sentiments, and that he thought violence was necessary to defend Muslim countries. In addition, just prior to the attack, a statement was posted to his social media accounts which had many parts of Anwar al-Awlaki, a now deceased senior leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. It had many messages that were very similar to Anwar al-Awlaki. And during the attack, the shooter fired shots at pictures of the current U.S. president and a former U.S. president, and a witness at the scene recounted that he made statements critical of American military actions overseas. Regarding the attack, I can now share that this shooting lasted approximately 15 minutes. Naval Security Forces engaged the shooter approximately 8 minutes after the shooting began. And we've determined that he was ultimately killed by law enforcement officers who responded very bravely that day. At the crime scene, we found a semi-automatic handgun with an extended magazine, several ammunition magazines, and approximately 180 rounds of ammunition. As announced previously, the ATF identified the shooter's weapon as having been lawfully purchased in July 2019 in the state of Florida. It was purchased under a hunting license exception. This exception allows non-immigrant visa holders who otherwise are not permitted to buy firearms or ammunition to purchase them if they have a valid state-issued hunting license, permit, or other required documentation. Partnerships are crucial in any case like this. Unfortunately, we have way too many cases like this. But I do want to take a moment to thank our other partners in this investigation, to include other federal, state, and local agency partners for their hard work. And they include the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, the ATF, the Homeland Security Investigations, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. I especially want to recognize the brave Naval Security Forces personnel who responded to the initial call for help, as well as the Escambia County Sheriff's deputies who also responded and very bravely ran in to face down danger. They did their jobs that day and they did them well. Those heroes saved lives that day. We do believe that very firmly. And three of them paid a price for it. Three of them were wounded that day. All three are recovering, but they paid a price for it that day. I'm also grateful to our FBI Jacksonville field office and its personnel, and a host of supporting FBI headquarters personnel and resources from other field offices. As you can imagine, when you have a significant crisis investigation like this, we will surge resources from throughout the country, and this case was no different. Finally, I want to echo the Attorney General's point about the challenge that law enforcement faces from default user-controlled encryption. The FBI continues to work with our private sector partners to find the right solution for accessing the digital evidence we need to stop criminals and terrorists alike. We're not trying to weaken encryption, to be clear, and after all, data security is a central part of our mission. But even with a court order, to date, we cannot access the contents of the two phones that the Attorney General referenced previously in this investigation, and countless devices in other investigations. We want to work together with the private sector companies so that we can lawfully access the evidence and information we need to keep our country and its citizens safe. This is not a problem that only the federal government has. This is a problem that affects our state and local partners, as well as many of our international partners. And we talk about this on a daily basis. We need to continue to work together between public and private sector to find a solution to this very challenging problem. Thank you.
Can I take some questions,
Pam? Mike.
Mr. Attorney General, can you explain why none of the other students are facing federal charges if you've identified them possessing child pornography or sharing jihadist ideologies?
You mean none of the other of the 21 that we're talking about?
Yes.
Well, as far as the ideological social media, it was not enough to trigger a violation of the federal statute. And the other cases were reviewed by the U.S. Attorney's Office under the standards they would use for anybody else, and they were not sufficient to trigger a federal prosecution.
If I could just follow up there, have you identified a purpose for the trip to New York, or do you believe that he may have been scouting other locations for another possible attack?
Yes.
Good. Dave?
We have not. What I will tell you is there were other Saudi students throughout the country. It is not unusual for them to travel. We did extensively vet the places they went, and this was not an unusual activity.
Sadie?
I have two questions. One is on topic, and maybe you can answer this, but I was wondering if the FBI had ever been called to the base previously for an investigation into extremism, or that there had been reports of any other sort of terrorist behavior or, you know, jihadi behavior previously to the shooting.
No, the FBI in Jacksonville has not been called to the Navy base for any of those extremist views or anything like that.
Okay. My second question, shifting gears just a little bit. On Friday, the FBI director had told the FISA court some changes in the way agents are going to seek FISA warrants going forward. Has the Justice Department proposed any other changes to the way that the FBI should open counterintelligence investigations of political campaigns, or can you talk to us about anything you're considering in that front?
Well, we're considering, you know, a number of additional things. Chris Ray and I have discussed a number of possibilities. One of the things that we have agreed on is that the opening of a counterintelligence investigation of a presidential campaign would be something that the director of the FBI would have to sign off on, and the Attorney General would have to sign off on.
After the San Bernardino problem, getting into the phone of one of the gunmen there, the Justice Department took Apple to court. Are you considering doing that in this case?
I'm not going to comment on that. Devin.
A question for the Deputy Director, if I may. Were the FBI's technical experts on cell phones consulted in the letter that was sent to Apple, and did they agree with sending that letter to Apple?
I don't know everyone who put eyes on that, but yes, the general counsel would have involved them as a matter of course.
And they agreed?
I don't know the answer.
Evan?
On the issue of the strike in Iraq on the Iranian general, the White House has told us that the Justice Department was consulted before the decision was made to do this. Can you explain to people in Congress, including conservatives, who have questions about whether or not this was a constitutional strike, given the fact that the Constitution gives Congress the right to declare war. And in this case, obviously, this is an act of war, and they were not consulted.
Well, the Department of Justice was consulted, and frankly, you know, I don't think it was a close call. I believe that the president clearly had the authority to act as he did on numerous different bases. You know, we had a situation where the Iranians had already embarked on a series of escalating violent action taken against our allies, taken against the American people, our troops, with the avowed purpose of driving us out of the Middle East. They had attacked shipping in the Straits of Hormuz. They had attacked oil fields in Saudi Arabia. They had attacked U.S. bases. They had attacked our embassy. They had killed Americans. These ongoing attacks were being planned and orchestrated by Soleimani. Our ability to deter attacks had obviously broken down. The Iranians had been given a number of red lines and were crossing those lines. They obviously felt that they could attack us and continue these escalating attacks with impunity. The general in charge of these efforts, Soleimani, was clearly a legitimate military target, and we had a brief window of time to carry out the attack when he arrived in Baghdad to plan and orchestrate follow-up attacks on American interests and American people, personnel. So this was a legitimate act of self-defense because it disrupted ongoing attacks that were being conducted, a campaign against the Americans, and it reestablished deterrence. It responded to attacks that had been already committed. Our purpose and our expectation was not to trigger a broader conflict or that events would spin out of control. On the contrary, we believed that the strike would restore deterrence and help avoid a continuing upward spiral of the violence.
General Barr, two questions, one on topic and one off. Did the investigation identify any vetting issues that could have led to the prevention of the attack? Anything that could have been noticed, passed along to authorities that would have indicated an attack was coming? And then I'll follow up.
Well, I think we've identified that the vetting should be improved of these candidates. I wouldn't suggest or speculate that improved vetting would necessarily have prevented this particular event, but I do think it's clear, and I think the Department of Defense agrees, that we have to improve our vetting procedures, and they are in the process of doing that.
Is that both pre and once the students are here, the pilots are here? And then if I could just do a quick follow-up on the other topic, in terms of the vetting.
I think we're talking about doing it before they come to the United States.
And then the follow-up question, did you, in terms of the evidence regarding General Soleimani, see any evidence of a specific imminent threat, or was it more generic in terms of what had been done and what was generally thought that was being planned?
I'm not going to get into the specific intelligence. I believe there was intelligence of imminent attack, but I do believe that this concept of imminence is something of a red herring. I think when you're dealing with a situation where you already have attacks underway, you know there is a campaign that involves repeated attacks on American targets. I don't think there's a requirement, frankly, for, you know, knowing the exact time and place of the next attack, and that certainly was the position of the Obama administration when it droned leaders of terrorist organizations. Yes.
Sir, two questions about Apple, quick questions. What is Apple willing to do here? You said nothing substantive. What are they willing to do here if the company's willing to do anything at all?
I don't know what they're willing to do.
Second question, how big of a problem is this on a larger scale for people at home to understand, you know, the battle in between technology companies and law enforcement and what you're dealing with? Is this something you've seen a lot or some of your associates have been dealing with for a long time?
Yes. It seems
like. We're seeing an increasing number of these cases, and it involves not only data at rest, that is, data stored in devices.
All right, we'll run the bottom of the hour news. We've kind of gotten more questions about Iran and Soleimani than just the shooting at NAS Pensacola. We did find out a few things, leaves a few more questions in the mix. We'll talk about those when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Monday. I don't know. I mean, a little bit of new information there, but not a whole bunch. Although that number, I think, is significant. That we were reporting, and all sources reporting this morning, a dozen, 12 Saudi servicemen would be expelled, or had been expelled. Then you heard that pressure, 21 expelled? It's a significant, I mean, it's significant to me. I don't know why, you know, the number was 12 and now it's 21. And I've got a lot of questions. I'm going to get your phone calls here and then I can get your questions and I'll throw mine into the mix as well. After hearing Attorney General Barr speak, what are your thoughts? 343-0106, 343-0106. And we'll go first to, let's go to Thomas first. Hey, Thomas.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thank you for having me on. I'll be very fast and succinct if I can. I haven't had time to write it down. The thing with me that bothers me is they were able to purchase a weapon with just a hunting license.
Yep.
Now, that there's something wrong there that they didn't have more documentation, a green card, yada, 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 inventing a driver's license. Yeah. How did they get a hunting license? And then they say, oh, you're okay, go right ahead. That's like going down to the carnival and buying a ticket.
Yeah, it was, I remember in the day after the murdering at NAS Pensacola, I had that same reaction. I said, this is not possible. I think it was my buddy Bill Riles at KRG first said, hey, looks like he gets, because I said, how the heck, you know, he and I were back and forth texting. I said, how the heck does the guy get the gun? He said, a hunting license. I said, what? How's he get a hunting license? And digging through Florida law, and it may be different in different states, but if you are on a non-immigrant visa, like these servicemen were, that is available to you. And then if you get that, how does this guy figure that out? If you get that, then, you know, it green lights you to be able to buy a gun. And a guy was using a Glock. I mean, yes, some people hunt with handguns, but that, I mean, it should have put up a flag. At least somebody gone by and investigated this.
Yeah, you don't usually buy a Glock to go hunting.
No. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer. It's a Florida law out there, and I wonder if they're going to address that.
That should be changed.
Agreed.
Right away. You and I agree on that. Holy smokes. And how did he? He probably had a license or something, or Social Security card.
Well, he wouldn't have a Social Security. I mean, he might from Saudi, but they're not citizens, not trying to be. You know, they're in this non-immigrant visa status, so they're not trying to work here, right? So they're not
right.
They're not coming to work. They're not changing their nationality.
No green card
because they're not coming to work. So I mean, it's
right.
Basically they're like a tourist. It's like an extra. I mean, it's like a tourist visa. Now I'm sure somebody will argue, if you don't have this, then you can't have some, you know, somebody from Europe who wants to come here and go on a hunt for an elk or something, or come whitetail hunting in Alabama. They can't do it. I don't know. I don't know how that goes down. But this was a situation where this guy. Obviously, somebody told him, or he figured out himself, this is how I can get a gun.
Well, we should change all that. Thank you for bringing it up.
Thanks,
John.
Thomas. Appreciate your call. And to the texter earlier, yeah, I mean, texter earlier said it's a shame that a shooting on a Navy, well, they're both a shame, so I edit for the texter, but I understand what the texter is trying to say. It's a shame that a shooting on a Navy base lasts 15 minutes while a shooting in a church lasts about 15 seconds. Yeah, there's a big question about who's armed there and not armed there. And finally, thank goodness, Bowditch got around to saying it, but true heroes there. There are a lot of true heroes. And the watchmen, Navy watchmen, with no weapons, because they weren't issued weapons, fighting with a fire extinguisher against this dirtbag murderer, they're of much honor and praise. And also the Escambia County Sheriff's Department, who came in. They had the guns coming on the base, and they have a precinct or some kind of substation that's very close to the base, I was told, so they could react quickly. All right, let's go to Matt in Fairhope next. Hey, Matt.
Yes, quick point is, it seems as though we as a nation have learned nothing from Beirut, from the embassy bombings in Saudi Arabia, from the embassy bombings in Africa. And my point is, why are we allowing foreign nationals, for whatever reason, to step foot on a United States military installation on our soil or foreign soil, period? The only people that should be there doing anything would be contract-type labor, for example, somebody who's like a cook or something like that. And then, we treat it like it's our embassy. This is our soil. This is our rules. You want to come onto our base, you will not have any weapon of any kind on your person. If you do, you'll be turned around or fired upon.
Well, this guy didn't have...
Goes,
this guy wasn't supposed
to
have...
Or anybody.
Well, this guy, wasn't supposed to. I mean... This Saudi military, I mean, I don't know how many there were total at NAS Pensacola at the time, but none of them were supposed to have guns, but he got one.
Well, that's my thing. I'm sure you remember, the bombing of the Marine Corps barracks in Beirut, mm-hmm. and or the building in Beirut, and, the barracks, I believe it was Saudi Arabia. My point is, they're not supposed to have weapons. They're not supposed to turn their car or their van into a rolling bomb. So my point is, let's go ahead and say, you know what, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, I could list off a whole bunch of nations, which, by the way, a lot of these nations were either A, on the President Trump's so-called no-fly list, or they were the nationals of people who were part of the perpetrators of 9/11. So if we have a problem with people from a certain region, nation, whatever of the world, that hate us to the point that they are willing to die to kill us, then why are we allowing them access to our, to any of our military installations or any United States installation? I question the sanity of allowing them on our soil. If they want to be trained in military tactics, they should invite us to their base in Saudi Arabia or wherever that base is and say, please come and help us train us over here, so that you feel a little bit less concerned that we're going to go ahead and come rolling through with the U-Haul full of fertilizer and try and take out half of your base. I mean, it, not to sound minimal here, but I mean, it was only NAS Pensacola, and thank God it wasn't something major like an Edwards Air Force Base or something that is densely populated where they could have driven in something and carried out something with a lot more lives that could have been claimed. So my thing is, first of all, let's go ahead and start eliminating their access from the military installations. And the second thing is very simple. We do way too much of applying our constitutional rights to foreign nationals. That does not. I'm not singling out anybody from Saudi Arabia. Somebody from Guatemala can come up here, and if whatever happens, they're afforded a constitutional right. Well, you have, the right to unreasonable search and seizure, or what have you. I was under the impression that our Constitution was for the American citizenry. Yes, there are certain rights in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that are for all humanity, but it is not your right as a, for example, a Guatemalan, to stick with my example, to come up here and to purchase a weapon of any kind. Regardless, if you're coming up here to go on a hunting trip, I'm sure there are plenty of guided tours in the state of Alabama if you want to go whitetail hunting in Alabama, where you can come and apply for a 5-day, 1-day, or 7-day, whatever, mm-hmm. License to be, renting a firearm, but you cannot purchase, and that firearm must be picked up from somebody who's licensed by the state and returned to that person at the end of each day, for every hunt.
And Matt, I appreciate
that means at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get the gun.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, but there's no entity like that. I appreciate your call, but we're going to run to the break and then come to a bunch more people waiting to talk. I'm going to get to y'all. But one of the things that's come up here is what it should be and what it is. And that's the problem. You know, we find out about these things secondhand, and you say why. You want a real answer why, and this is not one you get from the press conference. You heard the dancing around the Saudi kingdom that A.G. Barr did, and everybody, Democrats and Republicans in Washington, dance around the Saudis, right? They're here because they buy stuff, y'all. I mean, they're here because the Saudis buy munitions from the United States at a very big level. We train them. They're not here learning to use Kalashnikovs. They're not here learning to use Russian missiles or fly a MiG jet. They're learning to fly things that we can sell them. That's just now, may there be other reasons? Sure. You want to make sure there is the best trained, the people you might be fighting alongside, you might want to make sure they're the best trained possible so they can fight their own battles and we don't need to go fight their battles for them. All that stuff is probably very valid. There's validity to both of those. But if you don't think the drive of the government military complex is part of this, then you're naive. Let's go to Tim and Foley. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, kudos to the last caller. He made a lot of valid points. You know, I wouldn't put it past some of these people if you really thought about it. You know, taking a young child and investing 15 years, 20 years in his setup to get him in the military, to get him to train, to get him where he needs to be, and bring him over here and get him to do what they want him to do. And suppose he's flying a test plane during the Blue Angel show or they're on the base and just decides, you know, to wipe out the plane and himself. And I mean, it's just so terrible to think. But I mean, I agree. I don't think you should have these guys training weaponry and stuff like that in the United States.
Well, you've heard me over time. I'm always bothered when I talk about our allies, the Saudis, right? You've heard that.
Sure.
That doesn't mean, once again, before anybody goes further, doesn't mean there's not great people from Saudi Arabia. But as a kingdom and a group, there's just too many questions that come
right
up around the Saudi royal family that, to me, just being allies with the royal family worries me with the English and the Saudis. I'm too American, I guess, and I worry about that. But the point is, it boils down to money. Is what they're not going to say. It's money. And let me point out something, y'all. Think about this. Whether you question why President Trump goes easy on the Saudis over the Khashoggi murder, or you love to talk about former President Obama bowing to the Saudi king, right? Both of those are two presidents that I would say in recent decades are pretty diametrically opposed. Barack Obama and Donald Trump. And they both have pussyfooted around the Saudis.
Yep. I agree.
That's just truth. Appreciate your call. Coming right back, we'll take some more of those. Why? We got stuff to sell. Cynicism on a Monday, huh? 343-0106. Those are the digits.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 153, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. A Feinbaum show on the way in just about 7 minutes. You know, when Matt earlier was talking about the, he was on a roll, I know, but when he was talking about driving a U-Haul with fertilizer, of course, you know, that would be internal terrorism there. That's somebody. So, I mean, Matt, in that case, you got to vet the ones inside. I mean, that's I'm not going to say dirtbag's name, that blew up the Murrah Federal Building. Remember that? Out in Oklahoma City. And by the way, too, side note, I think about that. Bobby, number one, I mean, just sticks with me from some of my earlier days in radio when that happened. I have a sister who was in school at Oklahoma City University at the same time, who then moved to New York City, was in New York City at 9/11. Still there. She's still there. strange occurrences. I told her not to move to Mobile. But at the same time, every time I go buy fertilizer, especially ammonium nitrate, I'm not telling anybody anything. There's nobody finding out something that they don't know, you know. So ammonium nitrate fertilizer, every time I bought it, which it was just like 2 weeks ago, bought a big load of that, I think about the bombing of the Murrah building. I mean, when I buy something that annually I'm buying, this, you know, high nitrogen, all nitrogen fertilizer, and all I can think about is what happened back in 97. All right, text line here, and it's a good text. And I realize, like Dave from Gulf Shores, absolutely, Dave, I get it. This is a nuanced deal. This is why I always go, I understand from a realpolitik reasoning, you know, the reasoning for having the Saudis as an ally. It just bothered me. But yes, I do get, because Dave says, Sean, we need allies and strategic partners, oil too. If the world is our enemy, then we're the world's enemy too. Well said, Dave. I can't argue with anything you put in that text. It just, but I, you know, I think we ought to explain why, you know, we have other nations have people come train here. And yes, there's part of it to making sure, I mean, I can make the argument, it's good to train those people so they can fight their own wars and we don't have to. It's good to train those people that if we have to fight wars alongside them, we know the training they had. But I can't pretend that there's not a component in there for Boeing and Lockheed and Raytheon, and I mean, it's true. But Dave, I also agree with what you said in your text. Yes, we do. I mean, you look at the situation right now we're in with Iran, which, by the way, how brave are the Iranians that are protesting the mullahs? What some protester down on a water street here has no idea of, like, man, we're going to protest and get the beauty of our republic, the thing that makes me so happy when people protest. It could be things that are completely 180 to my political beliefs, and I take joy in watching those protests, is how it goes down here, generally. So it is chaotic, as uncomfortable as it can be, it's a beautiful thing. Because in Iran, they're shooting people. Okay? And the story that back in November, the last uprising they had in November, numbers between 400 and 1,500. Now, that's a big range, so we'll take 400. People were killed by the Iranian government for protesting. How brave are those people? Seriously. Iranian citizens standing up to... You saw what happened to the last group, and you still stand up and do it. It's amazing bravery. Amazing. On the parts of those people. But no, I do understand why we have to have an ally like Saudi Arabia in the region, not, you know, for oil and strategically in the region, right across from Iran. So I get that, but I can't, you know, also not talk about the fact that we're training people because we're selling them stuff for their militaries. I mean, it's frustrating with having an occurrence like happened at NAS Pensacola. And we'll see where it goes forward. Oh, yeah, and Ben saying, what about the new info on that huge bomb found in New Jersey? That thing, at least according to the news report I heard a second ago, I don't know the tonnage of it and what the explosive was in it, but they said, what, it could blow up for hundreds of yards, I think is what they were saying in that. And that bomb, we'll have more on that at the news break, and of course we'll talk about it tomorrow on Mobile Mornings, coming your way at 6. Don't miss Sports Night tonight, talking about the game tonight. Anybody want to load up? Let's go to New Orleans. Man, it's probably chilled out over there, isn't it? Well, pregame, they'll be on Bourbon Street. Probably get a table pretty easily. All right, Feinbaum will talk about that. He's on the way next.